Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on this Monday, July the 16th. Wasn't it a nice weekend, weather-wise anyway? Much nicer than last weekend's stifling heat. By the way, I forgot to mention the winners of last Monday's Beat the Heat contest. Last Monday at this time, we asked listeners to tell us how they coped with soaring temperatures. Two listeners were sent Wisconsin Public Radio coffee mugs for their iced coffee or hot coffee, whatever they choose, for their suggestions on how to cope with the soaring temperatures. Peter in Madison, he was the construction worker who called us from high atop some building scaffolding, saying that he donates plasma to cool off. Do you remember that? And Paul in Sparta, who says he puts the heat into perspective. He tolerated 130-degree heat in Iraq. So, thanks to everyone for participating in the Beat the Heat call-in last Monday at this time. Also, on Friday at this time, we had a It Happened in Wisconsin trivia contest, and the lucky winner of our guest's book, It Happened in Wisconsin, was Liz in Milwaukee. So congratulations to Liz. I wish we had a gift to give away today, but our guest book this hour won't be out until the fall. So your prize this hour will be learning something new as we talk about the new words that will be included in the newest edition of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. 100 new words will be included in the updated 2007 version of the Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary. The print version won't be available in stores until later this fall, but it's getting quite a bit of attention these days after the company printed some of the new words that will be included in the dictionary on its website last week. The word ginormous seems to be getting the most attention in headlines in the newspapers that I'm looking at right now. Ginormous, a combination of gigantic and enormous, meaning, as you might guess, extremely large, is on the 100 new words list that made the cut. Can you guess some of the other new words that are also dictionary worthy now? Do you have any questions about how a word like ginormous makes it into the dictionary? Or maybe some complaints that such a word becomes legit? 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or talk at wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is John Morse, president and publisher of Merriam-Webster Incorporated. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, updating a dictionary must be a ginormous task.
Well, it's certainly an ongoing task because the language never stands still, and the speakers of our language love to invent and reinvent their language constantly. So the work of keeping up with the English speakers of the world is one that never stops and is always a great pleasure.
And I read here that ginormous was a word that was voted a favorite word not yet in the dictionary a couple of years ago by visitors to your website?
Well, that's right. We had just for the fun of it ran a little contest in 2005 and asked people coming to the website, what's your favorite word that hasn't made it into the dictionary yet? And I think we were all kind of surprised that ginormous was far and away the most frequently submitted word. And certainly that made us take a particularly careful look at the word. And we said at the time that if interest really continues at this level, we would have to seriously consider entering it. And in fact, it has. Yeah. We have quite a dossier on this word of its widespread use in a lot of mainstream sources, and that's usually the trigger point to put a word in the dictionary.
Yeah, I was a little surprised myself because while I hear it now and again in conversation, I guess I haven't been scouring the printed page looking for that word. It's used a lot. It's published a lot.
Yes, and here's the other surprise that I really hadn't realized until we began looking at it. It's actually a much older word than you would think. Our evidence for that word goes back to 1948, and it shows up first in a little dictionary that a British lexicographer had created right after World War II to record the slang of British members of the armed services. And he picked up the word ginormous being used amongst members of the British armed services in during World War II. Then for the years that follow, it actually becomes fairly well established in British English, Canadian English, Australian English, but it never quite makes it into American English until the late 1990s. And our earliest piece of evidence from the 1990s has it being used in a press release about a website that is released on the website. And that these days really is the way that a word can enter the language very quickly. And so I think it seems to us as if it kind of burst on the scene just within the past 10 years. But in fact, it's been in use and in fairly mainstream established use in British sources for longer than that.
We are talking about new words with John Morris, president and publisher of Merriam-Webster Incorporated, talking about how a new word makes it into the dictionary. Just heard the story behind ginormous. We'll hear some of the other 100 new words that will be making it into the Merriam-Webster Collegiate Dictionary, the update coming out this fall, and wonder what you think, what questions you have about this, whether you've maybe wondered about a word that you've been seeing or hearing lately, wondering if it indeed has made the cut yet. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. And while you're at it, do you use the word ginormous? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. Conversations with George McGovern, Bob Dole, Brian Green, Fawaz Jurgis, Jim Fallows, Nancy Pearl. Topics ranging from centenarians in Okinawa to foreign policy, the Founding Fathers, and Shakespeare. Weekdays from 9 to 11, the issues that affect your lives here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, July the 16th. Coming up later today, we hope you join At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. Ben talking with you about current issues of the day. The issue we're talking about with you this hour, new words, and how a new word makes it into the dictionary. And we are talking about a few of the 100 new words that will be printed in the next edition of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary out this fall. One of them, ginormous. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Are there any other new words that you're hearing or using these days that you would like to run by our guest? Any questions about how a word makes it into the dictionary? Our guest is John Morse, president and publisher of Merriam-Webster Incorporated. I'm wondering, what kind of reaction are you getting to ginormous? Are people accepting of this when you add a new word like this to the dictionary, or do they think it's our language going down the tubes by adding slang like this to the dictionary?
Well, you hear both of those responses from people. It's interesting. This is a word that I think is actually being much discussed, even before we announced our entry of it into the dictionary. I think I was told the other day that there's one of the network morning shows where the two hosts have actually been debating this question for a while, whether ginormous is a good, sturdy new addition to the language that meets a need, or whether it's sort of a needless neologism that degrades the language. Opinions on that are always going to vary. I think that's what makes studying the language so interesting. But in general, I think when you look at the sort of the long arc of history of the language, English speakers tend to make pretty good choices, and words tend only to persist in the language if they really meet a need that hasn't quite been addressed in some other way, or if they just are sufficiently amusing to enough people. I think there is there's a playful streak to speakers of the English language, which again I think gives the language part of its charm. So I think if this appeals to our sense of playfulness, it will persist for a while. But clearly, this is a word about which opinions vary. And as I say, that's what makes it kind of interesting and fun.
Yeah, this is a combination of gigantic and enormous. Are there any other examples of words that are combos of other words?
Well, of course, I mean, the one that comes to mind immediately because it's a synonym is humongous, which in some way starts in the same way. It starts, in that case, on college campuses back in the 60s. And starts off being clearly a slang word, clearly only appropriate for very informal kinds of conversation, but over the course of 40 years really has established itself as part of the language and is now even part of that. We have a citation, an example of humongous being used on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. So when you can move from college slang to the editorial page of a major paper, that shows you the kind of ways that a word can evolve over the years.
I laugh because in some of the coverage of ginormous, the definition was extremely large or humongous.
Right. And in fact, that's what our dictionary entry says. We use the word humongous as that synonym. So humongous has made the whole journey, and I think in many ways so has ginormous. Just a few months ago, I was listening to a program on NPR, and then the commentator or the reporter used the word ginormous completely unselfconsciously, simply as part of that person's reporting. So I think it really has made it into the language and probably can be considered standard English at this point.
You know, I've caught myself saying the word bazillion, as in a bazillion dollars. Mm-hmm. Is that word in the dictionary?
Yes, we put bazillion in a couple of years ago, along with gazillion and a number of other ways that people express that thought. Again, I think you have words like that because, A, they serve a purpose, and B, they appeal to our sense of playfulness. You probably wouldn't put bazillion into a formal memo requesting funding for something, but you know that there are times when it's legitimate to be informal, it's legitimate to be playful, and we're allowed to do that.
Yeah. Margaret in Appleton is with us. Hi, Margaret, you're on the air.
Hi. I think it's great when words that meet a need and are new and creative come into the language. My question is, why do words that are just bad grammar get put into the dictionary where there is no need for them? And my pet peeve is irregardless, where there's no need for that word, and then it becomes standard only because out of ignorance that people just use it because other people are using it and they're not thinking.
Yeah.
And I'll listen off the air.
Irregardless is sort of an interesting case. One of the reasons why you have to put irregardless in the dictionary is, in fact, to tell people that it's non-standard. There's no way we can tell people, or there's no way we can warn people against a word unless we put it in the dictionary and then put the warning on it. And in fact, if you look in Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary and you look up the word irregardless, you're told that it is non-standard, and you're told you'd be better off using regardless instead. So in a sense, the only way you can warn people against a word is by putting it in the dictionary. But to some degree, I think even as we do that, I just have to add in that's not going to make the word go away. Dictionaries try to record the state of the language as it is, and as such, to some thoughtful people, I think it can have a conservative influence and keep language from changing. But the fact is that language often changes in almost majestic disregard to what the dictionary says, which is why we have to keep updating the dictionary. And irregardless, I suspect, is going to persist in use even as the dictionary says it's non-standard.
Thank you, Margaret, for that call. Any on the list this time or another example of a word that might be poor grammar that's in the dictionary but is there just to state that it is non-standard?
Well, I don't think that's not part of this particular updating, but there are about 100 to 200 words that sort of fall into that category of words that bother people because there is something which is perceived to be a misuse, but is nonetheless in widespread usage. And those words in Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary have what we call a usage paragraph on them. We go sort of, we step outside the role of being purely a definer and become, if you will, a commentator on the language, and we try to tell people, what's the status of that? Is that a rule which, in fact, still is pretty much in effect and applies, as is the case with irregardless? Or are we talking about a notion of correctness which really no longer is followed, even by educated speakers of the language? And so we try to give people a sense of where does propriety lie in regard to that particular word? And there are a couple hundred that really fall in that category.
Yeah. Let's talk about a few others that are on the new list for the latest edition. Picking one off the list, Bollywood.
No. Bollywood. Bollywood is interesting, really, I think, from two perspectives. One is, along with a number of other words that went in this year, I think really makes the point that globalization is occurring and the English language is feeling the effects of our coming in more and more cultural contact with peoples around the world. Bollywood is the word we use for the motion picture industry in India. And we get it by blending Bombay, or Mumbai, as it's called now, which is the traditional center of the Indian film industry, plus Bollywood. And you put Bombay and Hollywood together, and you come up with Bollywood. I think that words about entertainment are a big source of words going into the language, and words coming into the language because of globalization. So you really see both going on there.
I suppose telenovela is similar.
Yes, that's the perfect other example for soap operas that are produced in or viewed in Latin America. I think it got a big boost by the television show Ugly Betty, which often makes a reference to a telenovela. But we really have evidence for it going back about 30 years now that word has been appearing in the English language. And, of course, I mean, it's coming from the Spanish words tele for television and novela meaning a novel or some kind of a serial drama. So it's a story on television, a telenovela.
And here's one from our own popular culture, Sudoku.
That's right. One of the words that got in most quickly, often we like to see a real track record of 5 or even 10 or 20 years in the language before we feel really confident enough that the word has established itself. But Sudoku is a phenomenon, and even though that word really has only been used in the language, believe it or not, for about 3 years now, over the course of those 3 years, it has become such a popular form of entertainment that we feel pretty confident saying that word is going to persist in the language. For anyone who doesn't know, that's the word for the puzzles that people do in a 9x9 grid, and you have to. Some of the numbers are already filled in, but you have to fill the rest in such a way that each number is used only once, up or down. And in fact, Sudoku is short for a long Japanese phrase that I won't try to reproduce.
And in fact, let me hold you there because we have a newscast coming up, and then we'll continue talking about new words with John Morris of Merriam-Webster after the news. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Very nice to have you along on this Monday, July the 16th. It's 6:36, and we are talking with John Morris, president and publisher of Merriam-Webster Incorporated, about some of the 100 new words that Merriam-Webster is going to add to its latest dictionary edition. And we welcome your questions for him, maybe your suggestions of new words or If you're wondering about a word that you've been seeing or hearing lately, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We have been talking about some of the new words that have made the cut, and those include ginormous. We've talked a little bit about telenovela, talked some of Bollywood and Sudoku, and our next caller is Tom in Mason. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Okay.
Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't care much for bastardizing our language because all it does is make them sell more dictionaries and make the library shelves thicker. I think what they ought to do is, if there's another word being used, mark it as slang. Otherwise, leave the words we've got in, and if there's something that is not described exactly with what's in the dictionary, then make a new word. But I don't think it's really good to keep making dictionaries bigger and letting everybody talk a different language. If it's from a foreign country and we use it here, put an abbreviation behind it that shows what country it originated in.
Well, John Morse, a couple of different points there. Is this just making the dictionaries bigger?
Well, it is a challenge, of course. New words are coming into the language all the time, and from time to time we have to take some of the words that are no longer being used out of the dictionary. But just, I think, a point of reassurance on one of these points. Certainly words that come into our language from other languages are always described in those terms. In fact, one of the things that people are always most interested in are the origins of words. And right up at the beginning of every entry in our dictionary, surrounded by square brackets, is the story of the word and how it came into the language. And we always make quite clear what language the word came from. We also include another feature, which is a date, and that also is right up at the beginning of every entry. And the date is the earliest piece of evidence we have for the word being used in English to mean that word. And I think what that can do is offer some perspective to people as they're using language. If they want to resist neologisms, they can look the word up in the dictionary, they can see the date we have, and if that's an indication to them that maybe this word is just too much of a modern coinage and they'd prefer to avoid it, that's certainly always a speaker's prerogative, and that date is always there to give you that sense of the history and the texture of the word. But the fact is that the English language really is a huge unregulated enterprise, and we all allowed to do with it what we will. And again, I come back to my feeling is I think if you look at the long arc of the history of the language, English speakers have made very, very good decisions. And I would never want to interpose my own opinions in that process against what I really think is the great inherent wisdom of English speakers in deciding what words will become part of the language and what words won't.
Tom, thanks very much for the call. An email from Bill in Park Falls. He has a suggestion for the next dictionary edition. Crankosaurus, an extremely cranky person, one you do not want to mess with. Maybe. Have you ever heard of Crankosaurus? I think Bill just made that up.
He may have, but I'll tell you, if Bill likes that, I would like to invite him to come to our website at merriam-webster.com. And click on the Open Dictionary feature, and he can submit that word to us. We've now had about 10,000 different submissions to our Open Dictionary online, and some of them are just as delightful as Crankosaurus. And while you're there, you can look at all the other words that people have suggested, some serious, but others like that. So I like Crankosaurus, and I hope Bill will come to our website and submit that to the Open Dictionary.
I do, too. Thank you very much, Bill. Jack in Waukesha, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm perplexed a bit about the changes in pronunciation. A good example of what I'm talking about is, or was on the NPR News that ended a few minutes ago. And what was outstanding is Jerusalem, as if it was spelled O-O-Z, Jerusalem. And I'm wondering how those things work into the language.
Actually, I'm not well equipped to answer your question, except to tell you that what tends to happen in English is that the foreign word is, if you will, anglicized, which is to say that English speakers have certain ways in which we use sounds. We tend to have our, and I'm going to get a little technical here, we have our syllable boundaries in particular places. We have particular sequences of long and short vowel values that we expect to have in English. And over time, we turn the word, we start pronouncing the word as an English word as it becomes part of the English language, and less the way it was pronounced in its source language. And that gets people a little annoyed if they are particularly attuned to the way the source language pronounces words. But in fact, once a word becomes part of English, then we begin to pronounce it as English speakers would and not as the original language speakers would.
Thank you very much, Jack. Larry in Kenosha is with us now. Hi, Larry.
Hello there. I had a couple of questions. I'm curious, first of all, if there have been any words that have actually been dropped from the dictionary due to lack of use or whatnot. And secondly, why the lack of so-called vulgar or four-letter words that are commonly used. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Well, the answer is that in terms of four-letter words, if we have evidence that they do, in fact, show up in mainstream publications, as many of them now do, they are in the dictionary. It's no part of this revision, but they are there, and lest anyone worry, they are clearly labeled for what they are, but they are in the dictionary. In terms of words coming out of the dictionary, it does happen, and every 10 years when we do a full end-to-end revision of the book, we have to take a lot out. Last time we did that, we took one out that was one of my old favorites, Snollygoster. Snollygoster is the name for a kind of a mythical beast on the eastern shore of Maryland who comes in to your house at night and steals your children. It's obviously an unpleasant kind of a beast, so it came to be known just as an unpleasant person for a while was known as a Snollygoster. But I'm afraid that people stop using it, so we had to take it out of the dictionary last time. But I have a little campaign. I would like to see if I can't get people to use Snollygoster enough that maybe on the next edition we can get it back into the dictionary again.
Well, I'll try. You can go to your own website and include that.
That's right.
But back to the vulgar words or profanity, what about words that are racist or ethnic slurs, or for instance the F word as well for someone who is homosexual? Are those types of words included in the dictionary?
They are indeed, and really for two reasons. One, they are in fact used in our language, whether we like it or not, and I for one don't, but they are used in our language. And as such, people might have questions about them, and it really is the role of the dictionary to be able to answer your questions about words that you encounter, and those are words that you encounter. The other point goes back to the original call about irregardless. There's no way we can tell people about the stigmatized status of a word if we don't put it in the dictionary to say so. So, I mean, sort of... A lot of these words have either labels or, in the case of some of the really most shocking, they have paragraphs attached where we can really talk about the truly offensive nature of these words. And the only way that we can really offer that information is by putting the word in the dictionary.
We're talking about putting words in the dictionary and how words make that cut. or don't. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question for our guest or a word you'd like to run by him, John Morris is president and publisher of Merriam-Webster Incorporated. And we are talking about some of the 100 new words that Merriam-Webster will be adding to its latest dictionary out this fall. Ginormous is the one that gets the most attention, but there are many others. We'll talk about some of them after the weather, like smackdown, perfect storm, viewshed, hardscape. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 7 o'clock right now. After 7, it's our state capital report, where we will focus in on the state budget and the version of the state budget passed last week by the Republican-controlled Assembly. Some pretty hefty cuts proposed in that budget, including cuts to public broadcasting. We'll talk about that and other cuts to the UW system coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about new words that will be included in the latest edition of the Merriam-Webster Collegiate Dictionary, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is John Morris, president and publisher of Merriam-Webster Incorporated. And one of the 100 or so new words that you'll find in the dictionary this fall is smackdown. That sounds like a wrestling term, John Morris.
Well, yes, I think smackdown is a word that has gained a lot of attention over the course of the last 10 years, in large part because of its wrestling use. But it's interesting. We put it into the dictionary for the first time this year, and it already has developed four different distinct meanings, the first being maybe the most literal, which is knocking down or bringing down an opponent. But the second, quite specifically, meaning a contest in professional wrestling. A third, meaning any kind of decisive defeat. And the fourth being a confrontation between rivals or competitors, whether or not it has any actual athletic or combative aspect to it. So it's interesting that that word really has gotten a lot of applications. I think because it's a powerful metaphor for all kinds of different activities. But in the course of just 10 years in use, in large part propelled by television but and professional wrestling, a lot of different walks of life have found a use for smackdown.
Yeah, and certainly many of us have heard of Perfect Storm. The name of the movie, but with George Clooney in it, for one thing.
Right, right, and the book before that. Perfect Storm. Actually, we have evidence for that. We're going back to 1936, but clearly it was I think the book and the movie that moved it forward. But it's now moved more often, used more often, not in its meteorological sense, but again as sort of an extended metaphor, meaning a critical or disastrous situation created by a powerful concurrence of factors. And if you remember, the perfect storm was a concurrence of factors. And I think now, even often in political or social discussions, we talk about a situation that's a perfect storm because it has that powerful concurrence of factors.
This I had not heard about before, but it makes some sense. Hardscape.
Hardscape. Hardscape are the actual physical structures, such as fountains or benches or gazebos, that are incorporated into a landscape. It's a word, again, that's been around since the 80s, and we're making the judgment now that that really has become enough of the language of landscape architecture. And just sort of home decorating, that it's time to be in the dictionary.
I guess because I don't do much home decorating or landscaping, that's why I haven't heard of it.
You don't have a gazebo?
No, I don't. But maybe someday. Dan in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
First off, I want to say I love your radio show. I do it every morning on my way to work. So.
Thanks, Dan.
And then secondly, my wife always accuses me of making up words all the time, and so I don't actually know if this is a word or not, but the word skiwampus.
What does that mean?
It's like if something is kind of askew, if for example you're looking at a magazine layout and all of the pictures are kind of turned, and they're kind of like it's not in a straight orderly fashion. It's kind of everything's all disheveled, sort of speak.
I like the word. Did you make it up, or do you think you heard it somewhere, Dan?
Well, I've been saying it since I was a little kid, and everybody in my family says it. So I don't know. Like, I always thought it was a word. Yeah. And so when for example, if you're working on, like, my wife's an editor, and she started using it after I did, and so she went in, and one of the articles, everything was all messed up, and it looked all weird, and she's like, oh, it looks all skiwompy. And she said that everybody looked at her like, what word did you say?
Skiwampus, John Morris.
Skiwampus. Again, I urge you, come to our website and submit that to Open Dictionary. That's a wonderful word. Obviously, taking cattywampus and askew and putting them together. It's interesting. I mean, you talk about your whole family used it. There was a book that was out, I think actually coming back on the market again, by Paul Dixon called Family Words. And words that develop within families. And it sounds like that's sort of a perfect kind of family word. And sometimes someone else outside the family will hear it, and that can be the beginnings of it spreading and coming into more widespread use. But a delightful word, and please do come to our website and submit that one.
I like
okay,
it.
Well,
thank you very much, Dan. I like that. And what was the word again that was taken out that you wanted to revive, John Morris?
Snollygoster.
Okay. Well, one of the family words that my mother called me this, and it's got to have something to do with a German heritage or something. Putzendutzen. So, that's one of the family words we had that nobody else has heard of. Andy in Onalaska. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I had a question for you. It had to do with changing the usage of a word. I'm curious if the word impact as a verb is in your dictionary, and when that started, and if it's acceptable in your dictionary's opinion.
Yes, that is in the dictionary, and I kind of forget exactly when our earliest piece of evidence for that is, but my sense is it began being popular in the 1940s, and almost immediately people started getting a little bothered by it. And it's what we call in grammar a functional shift. First you had a bucket of water, and then you put it on your lawn, and that was watering the lawn. First we had the noun impact, but when we had a verb impact, that when that kind of usage is new and suddenly becomes popular, it tends to bother people. But it is a part of the English language since its very birth, and over the years people tend to get used to it. Contact is another one like that. When people first talked about "I'm going to contact you tomorrow," when that use was new and popular, people were very bothered by that too. They knew there was a noun compact, but didn't like the verb compact. And the same thing's happening with impact. I would predict that a generation from now, no one will raise an eyebrow at impact.
Thank you very much, Andy. Michael in Phoenix sent this email. I'm wondering how long it takes for definitions to change, a related question. I see the change in the definition of the word appreciate, which once meant almost exclusively to increase in value, but now it is synonymous with the words grateful or understand. I appreciate you doing this for me. I appreciate how much you sacrificed. I've always thought of appreciate as having both of those meanings. So, John Morse?
Yeah, I think it is. It has had both of those values for a long time, but certainly, the earliest sense going back to the 17th century would be the notion of grasping the nature of appreciating a difference. I don't think it's not a big jump to go from grasping the nature to admiring something. I mean, if you grasp the nature and the nature is good, then you would admire it. So it wasn't a big jump. And the intransitive use that I think the caller's talking about to increase your number of value, I think actually comes into the language after the other one. But mm-hmm. but my sense of this is the same as yours. I think mm-hmm. all of those senses have been in the language for a long time. In general, but just to the question, how long does it take for a word to get its definition changed? We would look for at least about 10 years of continuous use over a lot of different kinds of publications and some indication that really is in mainstream use, that, that professional writers and editors are using it for a number of different years before we would enter an additional definition.
Donna in Bloomer, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I just had a quick question about pronunciation of words and wondering about one in particular, and it is nuclear. If the maligned pronunciation nuclear also appears in the dictionary.
Yeah, real quickly, yes, it does, but it has a little symbol in front of it, and it looks like a little divided by sign. And that symbol says that we hear it in educated speech, but opinions differ about this, and some people will criticize you. So the fact is we do hear nuclear used by college presidents and scientists, but we also know full well that a lot of people disapprove of that. So it has that symbol in front of it that says this is in widespread use, but it's disapproved of.
Let's try one more new word, crunk. What does crunk mean?
Crunk is getting a lot of attention. It is a style of Southern rap music that features repetitive chants and rapid dance rhythms. It's been around since 2000, and some of the rap performers that have seen us enter into the dictionary are just delighted that a form of rap music and hip-hop has made it into the pages of the dictionary. But in fact, it is showing staying power, and it is, again, the sort of the effects of popular culture.
Well, it's been fun. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Well, thank you.
John Morse, president and publisher of Merriam-Webster Incorporated. Thanks to Cheryl Gasser and to Christina Taylor for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.